Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, guys, and welcome to our brand new podcast, Broadway Breakdown. I am one of your hosts, John Wiscavige, and
okay.
It's going well.
It's going so well. I was like, great, and I'll enter here. No, sorry. I missed my cue. I apologize. I'm your other host, Matt Koplik, and my timing is terrible. So, all right.
No, his timing's so great. And so this is our inaugural podcast for our little love child, our little Broadway breakdown, where, you know, we're doing something really groundbreaking. Two gay men talking about musical theater.
And death. And everything in between.
And death. Honestly, every day, a little death.
Yes. Thank you, Anne and Charlotte. Between the two of us, who would you say? I say you're the Charlotte to my Anne. Would you say that's probably accurate?
I would say so. Yeah, I really do. And so, honestly, if you don't get that reference,
what the fuck are you doing listening to this?
No, you should probably stop listening to this podcast because you're not going to get a lot of it.
No.
But yeah, so this is the first episode. I feel like we should maybe just talk a little bit about what it is we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about engineering.
Astrophysics and fitbow. I think that's...
Fitbow?
Fitbow. Isn't that how Americans call it? Fitbow?
Oh, no? Football. Oh, my God.
Oh, do you think I was saying like fit, like F-I-T?
Yeah, I was like, what's Fitbow? I was like, is that like a new like step counting app?
No, that was my accent work.
You guys, you're in
for... My Tyler.
You were in for quite a treat right here.
This is going to be... I think this is already going to be something quite special.
I think so, too. I really, really do. So Matt, you're the one who kind of like came up with this idea and concept. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I'll talk about how my brain works for a few minutes. Yeah. You know, everybody, bear with me. It's gonna be a bumpy ride. Or a rumpy bide. Who knows? Honestly, anything's possible at the Broadway Breakdown. Those of you who don't know me, and if you don't know me, I don't know how you found this podcast, but I do a web series called Baking It on Broadway, or rather, I did. It's coming to an end. And I was trying to think of something new to do to pass my time, because sitting alone with my thoughts is dangerous for me. I had met John rather recently through a friend of ours watching RuPaul's Drag Race, which, if you don't watch it, also, what are you doing on this podcast?
Yeah, definitely.
So I knew John sort of well, not well as well as I had hoped. And I, those of you who aren't friends, Facebook friends with John, and if you aren't, you're missing out. He posts these amazing videos and he tweets and he statuses all these quite hysterical things. And I thought to myself, I feel like if you could get John and me into a room and talk about Broadway, you'd just have like, you know, the best time in the world. Add a couple of
magic, just like. It's like the equivalent of like Stephen Sondheim tears. Like we are just, we're delivering you musical theater glory. The next word that comes to my mind is whole, but that's, I know that's not what it should be, but let's just say that we're a Sondheim glory hole. We're everything you want about musical theater conversation.
God, what if children end up listening to this, John? You're going to like,
oh my gosh.
You're going to be a terrible influence. Anyway, the goal was to be a Stephen Sondheim musical theater glory hole.
Yep.
And so far, only the second part of that has come true on our first podcast.
Yeah,
we've just been a glory hole.
We're just a dirty truck stop glory hole. Yeah.
With like a hint of glitter, like someone tried to make it nice after a while and just like failed. It's like when you put a fresh coat of paint on a Super 8 motel. It's like, it's still a Super 8, you know?
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
But yeah, so like So let me finish out the prologue of this. This is turning into like the Les Mis prologue. It's so fucking long. I reached out to John and was like, let's talk about Broadway. And he's like, absolutely. And he goes, side note, I'm going to be in Canada for the entire summer. So in case you're wondering why, like, it sounds like we're not in the same studio, it's because we're not. We're in two separate countries. John is in Canada doing a wonderful musical called Murder for Two. John is playing one of the two, I'm assuming.
I do. Yeah, I do.
I've never seen the show, but according to the title, it's two of you. So I'm assuming you're one of the two.
Yeah. Although I play 10 different characters, so... Like, don't worry about it. It's okay. No, it's also why I have this beautiful morning voice, because I spend most of the show just, like, I'd say, like, doing, like, a super healthy, like, mixed belt. And by mixed belt, I mean, like, just, like, screeching my vocal cords. So if at any point I sound like the ghost of Elaine Stritch, it's because I am.
It's because you are the ghost of Elaine Stritch.
It's because it's 10 a.m. in Canada, and I had a show last night, and... And this is what a BFA gets you in vocal training.
It's very true. I mean, I guess you're not really the ghost of Elaine Stritch unless you woke up and drank some Makers on the Rocks or something like that. Did you do that? Is that how you warmed up today?
Yeah, definitely didn't do that. Don't worry. Definitely
can't say the same.
Didn't do that.
No,
it's not a coffee mug full of red wine. I swear, everybody.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet. Maybe second or third episode, we'll get to that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now you all know that's the how we met, that's how this podcast came to be, and over the course of many text messages and coffee dates, John and I came up with a structure. It's slowly crumbling as we speak, and it's all gone out the window, but and here we are, and it's very exciting, and I hope that this doesn't turn into a giant clusterfuck.
I don't think it will.
You don't?
And if it does, you know what? Like, bigger clusterfucks have happened. And that's one of the things, actually, we're going to talk about on this show.
That is true.
We kind of want to do... How do you like that for a segue? Let's, like, pause and talk about that. Like, that was such a good segue.
That was, so like... Anyways, that was a Sondheim segue. That, like, went right into the next book scene.
So one of the things we're going to talk about on this podcast is kind of, like... We want to break down the different sections of theater. Like, theater is such an all-encompassing, amazing entity. And there are so many parts of it that work. And there are so many parts of it that don't work. And there are so many shows that maybe seem like they should have worked and they didn't. And so one of the, like, overarching themes of this is that we're going to break down different sections. We're going to take some episodes and talk about different shows and talk about why they worked, or maybe do like a redemption episode about a show and talk about what maybe, like, why they didn't work because of the political climate, because of the social climate, because of what was happening on Broadway, because of what was happening behind the scenes, and kind of just like talk about, like, break those sections down, maybe talk about, like, what could have happened differently. I mean, like, I want to discuss eventually Jane Eyre the musical and talk about, like, that's one of my, like, favorite musicals, and talk about, like, break down the beats of why Jane Eyre the musical is just, like, lost in the musical theater canon. Another thing we want to talk about is also, like, get really literal and talk about literal breakdowns. I mean, I have some here in front of me that we could definitely, I think we're going to talk about later in the episode.
As do I. For those of you who don't know what that means, equity breakdowns or non-equity breakdowns for auditions. When you audition for a show, the company that's doing the show posts a breakdown of all the roles and what they're looking for in each role. And some of them are pretty to the point, and some of them are confusing, and some of them are just ridiculous. And so, yes, we will be discussing that today for the first episode and future episodes.
Yeah. So those are just a couple of things that we will be breaking down. And if at this point I learn enough technology to do one of those, like, wiki, like, future John, this is the time to edit that in. So hopefully, wiki. Cool.
Like the record wiki wiki, like in like a 90s hip hop kind of thing.
Yeah. Like it's the breakdown wiki wiki. So maybe that's our theme song. Someone call Lilla Crawford. We're getting her to record it.
Okay.
I want
it to be like a compilation of like Patti LuPone line readings. Billy, I beg to differ with you. I want that to be like our segue into everything. Like anytime you and I go on a debate, people start to Billy, I beg to differ with you.
That was my first foyer into Patti LuPone, was that Anything Goes recording. And I remember someone had burnt it for me, so I didn't have the actual CD cover. So I had no idea who this woman was. But I remember listening to it and being like, I have no idea what she's saying. But I know that I have, like, the biggest gay boner for her.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, every time she belted, I was like, ugh. Listen to that chest voice. And then my parents were like, do you want to go to church? I'd be like, yeah. I listened to Patti LuPone on the way to church, which,
that's,
you know, symbolic, symbolism, really.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been my first introduction to her, too, because the first recording of Evita I ever had was actually the movie soundtrack. I want that to be a lesson to everybody that just because you're given a specific recording as your introduction to a piece doesn't mean it has to be the definitive interpretation for you. You can grow and you can learn. But yeah, when I was like seven, so my dad used to work in film, like not anything like fancy. He wasn't like Steven Spielberg or anything like that, but he was fancy enough that he got a lot of free swag, including the Evita soundtrack because the movie was coming out. And I remember listening to it and I was like, this is funky, but I don't understand any of it. And the Patti LuPone thing I had was the Anything Goes. And similar to you, I was like, I don't know what she's saying, but I'm loving every second of it. It was like purely chemical. Like I couldn't, you can't explain the connection that you get when you listen to Patti LuPone sing. It's just, it's there and you feel it. You don't understand it. But
you really don't.
But you want to know something else?
It's such a Ring of Keys moment. It really, really is. Mazel tov for Janine Tesori for giving us Ring of Keys to describe all those first gay moments.
Shout out to her.
The one thing
I'll say though is it was extra confusing for me because I actually had like the legitimate cast album, like with the pamphlet and everything, that with like sassy woman on the boat. And there's a picture of Patti in it, in her Blow Gabriel Blow costume. And you can Google it. She has a flaming red haired wig and she's wearing this giant red dress with the deepest plunge you've ever seen. I'm talking like V-neck plunge down to her her pubes. It's like insane.
Down to her LuPone.
Yeah, down to her giant LuPone. And she's like striking this big pose of sort of like, you just know she just hit a D and it sounded incredible. And she's like so proud of herself. And I remember looking at this photo all the time and like just being so confused as to why I was drawn to it. Cause I was like, I was seven. I didn't think it was sexual, but I would always just like kind of come back to it. This is all to say that her line reading and you're the top of the Billy, I beg to differ with you. We're going to use that at some point as a transitional sound effect. Now.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
So I feel like with this first episode, we should probably just like start with something easy. We'll like slightly... God, why is everything so sexual to me today? I was going to say, slightly just like lube you up.
Oh my God. I mean, it's like almost 1 o'clock here, so I'm already in that stage. Before noon, I'm never like that, so you've got no excuse.
I never am either. I don't know. Apparently podcasts bring out the sexual deviant in me. Or maybe what brings up the sexual deviant in me is Sondheim musicals, which, surprise Sondheim segue, I know that you saw Assassins last night, and that's the first thing I want to talk about. And so I think it's so exciting that Assassins is back in New York right now for a little encores for their off-center season. And I want to hear all about it because I'm missing it. And everybody has the right to be happy, and I do too. So give it to me.
Is that what you told Sondheim too?
No. What I told him was, please, I haven't eaten in 3 days in your basement. I need at least a slice of gluten-free bread.
If you're going to bruise me, do it under the shirt so no one can see.
So, or at least let me, you know, star in, I don't know, Sondheim on Sondheim. at some regional theater. Anyways.
I just want to be the beggar woman in, like, some gender-bending production of Sweeney. That's what, that or Love It. Like, I would go for either. But anyway, so yes, on to Assassins.
Assassins!
Yeah, I saw The Invited Dress last night, so I'm gonna try and, like, talk more about the show itself, because it was the first time they did it in front of an audience, and Encores is a very short rehearsal period. Although I do want to get on my soapbox for a quick second. Those of you who don't see Encores very often, even off-center or regular Encores, it started off literally just, like, as a concert. Like, it was the first, like, two seasons, I think, was, like, everyone was in, like, black cocktail gowns and tuxedos and had scripts, and they were in front of a big orchestra, and they just went up to a mic, and they did the show, like, as written, as originally orchestrated. And then when they did Chicago, they, like...
I was going to say, Chicago is the one that changed it, right?
Yeah, like, it wasn't fully stage Chicago. They would still have people, like, stand up and just sing, but there was actual choreography this time, and it was more of an integrated production. Everybody still had scripts, and it was, like, sort of the first time that everybody recognized the brilliance of that show in a long time, and it moved to Broadway immediately, became the Chicago we all know and love. And ever since then, Encores has sort of stepped up its game every year, to the point that now they're basically productions. Like, sometimes someone will have a script, because I think for, like, equity reasons, someone has to hold a script at least once for it to still count as a staged concert, I think.
Interesting. I didn't know that, but that makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, I feel like that's part of the rules. Like, at least at one point, someone has to have a script. Mm-hmm. And usually they give it to, like, the legend who's only got, like, 2 days of rehearsal. Like, I remember when I saw Little Me, everyone was off booked except for Judy Kay.
Sure.
And truth be told, she didn't need to be. She was like, I'm Judy Kay, I've got 2 Tony Awards.
Right.
But I feel like that's sort of one of the ways they get more polished, respected actors like Judy Kay to come on, is like, you don't have to be memorized, like, hold a script, we don't care. Well, you know, like, the young chorus kids, they're like, no, you gotta be off script.
Yeah, those young chorus kids are literally just, like, flipping for their lives, and Judy Kay is just, like, flipping pages for her life, and you're like, I don't care, I love it.
Exactly. But it does create a weird dynamic when you're judging an Encores production now, because it is still, like, a short amount of rehearsal time, and you can't totally judge it as, like, a fully integrated production, but at the same time, you're like, I mean, they're all fully costumed with big old sets and staging, and, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I always kind of have that internal conflict in me when I watch an Encore show. This was pretty staged, I would say. Like, it was a unit set. They had, the big set piece was, like, a grid, like, a big Dreamgirls grid on top of the stage that, had things slide to and back from, like, the back gallery, so they would have, like, a bullseye target mark, they would have pictures of presidents that they would try to shoot at, a picture of Jodie Foster and a picture of Charles Manson floated to the front at one point, to which one woman in the audience shouted, "Oh, God!" And everyone in the theater just, like, erupted in laughter. just because, like, a framed picture of Charles Manson is just, like, floating at you, and some woman, stupid woman 2 rows in front of me. Oh, God.
I know. Calm down, girl. Oh, gosh. I love when people do that.
And it was an invited dress rehearsal, and so I assumed that everyone in the theater, if, you know, they didn't know Assassins intimately. Like, I don't know the show, like, in great detail, but I know the show well enough to know what I'm getting myself into. Like, I know the concept. I know most of the songs. I'd never seen it before, but I knew the show decently. But there was also a row of, like, 19-year-old girls behind me. I don't know how they got in, but they, like, for some reason, they just, like, didn't understand they were seeing Assassins. The scene between Squeaky Frome and, what's her name? Sarah Jane Moore, is that her name? Mm-hmm. Sarah Jane, yeah. The Kentucky Fried Chicken pot-smoking scene.
Yeah, great scene.
But it's, like, it's so hippy-dippy and, like, up in its own head. And at some point, they're talking about Charles Manson and, like, the apocalypse that's essentially going to happen. Mm-hmm. And these girls behind me are sitting there going, like, what is this show? Oh. And I wanted to turn around and be like, even if you
it's Assassins!
It was jazz hands. It's Assassins! Even if, like, even if you don't know the show that well, it's still called Assassins. You know you're not seeing Anastasia. Like,
right. Oh, my gosh.
The hell?
No.
I know.
Unless maybe they thought they were. Were they wearing, like, little, like, tea party prom dresses? Because I swear, like, every girl when I saw Anastasia was, like, dressed like that, and I was like, girl, calm down. Like, if you were a female at a Broadway show, unless you were there, like, dressed, like, to the nines as a fashionista, like, no one's looking at you. We're all waiting to look at Ramin Karimloo. Like, and so, oh gosh, that drives me crazy.
It drives me crazy too.
That is the other kind of thing about assassins I was thinking as you were talking, was that, like, I feel like now, I'm sure when it first came out, it was even more so, but, like, I feel like people don't really go to see assassins unless you know what you're getting into. Like, I feel like,
yeah,
I've only ever seen one production of Assassins. It was at my college, so I'm just going to go and say it was, I'm sure, the pinnacle of the most perfect production of Assassins that I will ever see.
Absolutely, the way Sondheim intended it to be.
Yes, exactly. Like, with like, barely out of puberty, post-teenagers, you know, playing it. Yeah.
Perfect. No, yeah. Screw you, Joe Mantello, and your Tony Awards.
Exactly.
So, like,
but the thing is, that's so odd to me. And so that's so also funny that, like, I wasn't surprised when you just said that there was, like, a floating picture of Charles Manson. Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's in Assassins.
Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of interesting set-wise.
Yeah, the set I thought was actually pretty good.
Okay.
I'll always maintain that the roundabout production that was, you know, basically underneath, like, the Cyclone roller coaster was perfect.
Yes.
Set, perfect theme, perfect production, because I actually... came across a bootleg of the original, like, Playwrights Horizons production. Super bad quality.
Okay.
It's in, like, black and white. It's in, like, the third row, and it's at an angle, but you can basically get an idea of the staging. And I was surprised at, like, how choppy it was. Not, like, because the show itself is essentially vignettes, right?
Yeah, of course.
Themed vignettes, yeah. But there was no cohesiveness to the original staging. It was, like, each scene was a different backdrop and a different lighting style, and I can understand why people who walked into the first production knowing nothing about it might have been turned off by it, because it was, in addition to just, you know, being a very hard subject matter to deal with,
mm-hmm.
it was also very, like, everything was very separated and didn't really come together.
Mm.
And I think that over time directors have tried hard to make it all come together. And
yeah.
I thought, yeah, this director did a very good job with that.
Cool.
A couple of blackouts every now and then, which I'm not the greatest fan of. I feel like we as musical theater society have sort of matured out of blackouts.
We phased out of blackouts. I would agree with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's like that whole, in the, like, 1940s and early 50s when they would, like, bring down the curtain to do a scene change and come it back up. Like, we're done with
yeah.
that. Like, scenery has evolved, lighting has evolved, we as, you know, an audience have evolved, and we want a little more seamless transitions.
Yeah.
So there was some of that, but every now and then there'd be a blackout, and I get it, it's encores, but I was also like, I want that to go into the next scene now. Mood's ruined. You ruined it.
And Anne Kaufman, who directed it, I'm not really super familiar with her work. I was looking up a few things, and it seems like she doesn't really direct a lot of musicals. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't...
No, as far as I'm aware, she doesn't really
She's kind of like the New York Theater Workshop, like, go-to person. And so I get kind of wanting a more theatrical, like, a straight theater-based director for a production like Assassins, because it's such an interesting musical. Like, I love it, but, like, it's such a weird mix of things that, like, and so, you know, you talking about things coming together, I think that's the beauty of the show, is that, like, it's a lot of different crazy parts that probably shouldn't work together, and sometimes don't, depending on the production, they don't, but when you get it to work together, it's really quite moving and quite awesome.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I sort of have always looked at Assassins as, like, if you, like, put all the Sondheim shows as a graduating class of BFA musical theater majors, Assassins is, like, the one that could have easily gone into, like, teaching or, like, communications, but, like, had a really good voice and a really deep love of theater, so went into theater.
Yeah.
And she's that one.
Was the one who came in, like, every class only singing either, like, Adam Gettle or, like, Ricky Ian Gordon or, like, some, like,
oh, yeah.
crazy out there song about, like, a Pegasus horse with, like,
Absolutely.
Flowing music in 7/8 time, and they're like, the assignment was to sing a patter song.
Absolutely. Like, the big spring musicals Carousel, and she comes in with Janis Joplin, and you're like, why? And she's like, because it's
but
how my soul felt today.
But she was still good. She was still good.
Yeah, she sounded great. Yeah, she sounded great. She connected to it.
Really had,
like,
a beat.
Yeah, you just don't sing Janis Joplin for, you know, Kismet. But that's neither here nor there. But
yeah.
You're right. Assassins is one of those musicals, similar in my mind to like Spring Awakening or the first act of Falsettos, or if you're just going to do March of the Falsettos, where it is very choppy in terms of writing and structure. And so a director really needs to find a way to make it into a big whole and have it sort of flow in and out and all feel of the same theme. And, you know, as I said, it's encores. You can't judge it on a super professional level. They didn't have 2 months of prep. And I'm assuming they only had like a day of tech before this. But there was a lot of it that worked very well. And I felt like it all felt like it was of the same show. Even if some moments were maybe not quite as polished as they should be. And that is a show where it is not so ironclad that if something's slightly messy, it still works. Like, you really need to kind of have laser focus to make it work. I would say the thing that probably resonated most with the audience was the Ballad of Booth, weirdly enough, because that was because the whole theme of that one is, first of all, the balladeer in this production was an African-American actor, which really was really interesting to have him sing the Ballad of Booth with Stephen Pasquale there singing John Wilkes Booth's monologue about, you know, slavery and how Lincoln killed the country, and it added a great resonance to it, which I thought was very powerful. But also just how Booth justified his actions. But you can see why someone feels so passionately about their country that if they are an unhinged person, they can justify themselves doing that, which I think is also the brilliance of the show.
Agreed.
And it takes a really terrible act and doesn't so much justify it, but makes you kind of sit there and not look at it quite as black and white as you might have before, which is very amazing.
Which is the brilliance of like human nature and point of view and like our minds, how they work, is that like every single one of these people were convinced that what they were doing was so exactly right. And so it's that's one of the things I've always loved about the show.
Why did you do it, Johnny? Nobody agrees. You who had everything, what made you bring a nation to its knees? Some say it was your voice had gone. Some say it was booze. They say you killed a country, John, because of bad reviews.
Were there, other than Stephen Pasquale and I believe Clifton Duncan, who played the balladeer, were there any other standouts that you really love? Like, I'm such a big Stephen Boyer fan.
Stephen Boyer is lovely. That role's not super impressive. He has the one song, really, so that was a little disappointing to me. I wish I had the playbill in front of me. It's I do actually. One moment. The actor who played the one who in the Santa Claus costume.
Is it Samuel Bick?
Samuel Bick, yeah. His name was Danny Woolahan, and he was great. He like really captured the audience with his two monologues.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's such a fantastic role because you aren't given a song; you're just given these monologues, these epic monologues. And every time I see it, I did watch a how do you say in French a bootleg on YouTube of the revival. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm always so captivated by that character and by those monologues.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
How was Margaret Johnson, aka Victoria Clark, as Sarah Jane Moore? Did the pony kick her?
The pony didn't kick Margaret. The pony kicked Clara.
I know. God. In my mind, the pony kicks everyone.
That pony is in it to win it, just kicking everyone under the sun.
Yo.
She was good. She was actually a drier Sarah Jane Moore than I'm used to. I'm used to Becky Ann Baker and even Deborah Monk, who really kind of played up the... I'm going to totally butcher the pronunciation. The frivolity, is that how you say it? Like, the frivolousness of that character. Sarah Jane Moore, I've always sort of seen as super earnest, like, no sarcasm. Like, everything she says is how she feels. Almost like a wannabe sorority sister, if that makes sense.
Mm. I've always seen her as, like, yeah, as, like, a tad neurotic, even. Like, everything's just kind of, like, you know, she's obviously very scattered. But, like,
yeah, scatterbrained.
She's so, like, earnest in her scatteredness of, like, well, I'm trying to figure it out, but, like, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost because she is so earnest, she can't even get it together because she's just so, like, of the moment all the time. And,
yeah.
You know, there's that running gag of she's got the great big purse and she can't mm-hmm. find anything.
Exactly, yeah.
She's always shooting off the gun. Yeah. So, Vicky Clark was good. She was very dry, though. And it was a very different interpretation of the role that I enjoyed, but I wouldn't say it was my favorite. Like, it's not, if I were to direct a production of Assassins and, you know, give me $20,000 and I'll do it, mm-hmm. I wouldn't go with that mold. But it was good. She found a lot of laughs in the role that aren't in places that aren't always there. I wanted to actually bring up with Assassins, every Sondheim show like has the debate about it. So like Follies, intermission, no intermission. Sweeney Todd, like include the Beggar Woman's lullaby in the second act or don't. And
always include it.
You think so?
I love it. I love that moment.
We'll get into that debate another day. I like it too. I do think that it kind of gilds the lily of the moment. But with Assassins, the moment of debate is always a song that was added to the production in 1992. So a little short history lesson. Assassins opened at Playwrights Horizons in December of 1990. It was supposed to be like the next big Sondheim show, but it got a lot of backlash. Critics were very mystified by it and audiences really hated it and didn't really see a major production again until 1992 at the Donmar Warehouse, where then artistic director, future Oscar winner Sam Mendes directed it. And the thing that really changed it, and changed it actually for Frank Rich, who reviewed both productions, was they added a song towards the end of the show called Something Just Broke, which is mm-hmm. A song for that represents sort of the American public as they all sort of react to the different presidents getting shot and dying. And some people think that it's unnecessary. Some people think that it's too sentimental. But I actually think it makes the show work. And Frank Rich agreed with me on that. He said the adding of that song makes the commentary of the show that much more focused, because up until that moment, you're only focusing on each assassin and their personal problems and their lives and why they did what they did. And they're justifying their actions for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then when that song happens, you realize the effect that it has on millions and millions of people. And it's not done in this grandiose manner. It's very simple. Sondheim is really good at kind of finding the specificity in the great big emotions of songs.
I was out in the yard, taking down the bed sheets, when my neighbor yelled across,
"The president's been shot."
I remember where I was, just exactly where I was, in the yard out back.
"The president's been shot."
I was getting me a shoe shine,
folding sheets,
when I heard,
we were waiting for a carriage,
newsboys.
Suddenly they're shouting in the street, "Lizzie's sheet.
The president's been shot."
I'll remember it forever. And I thought,
where I was, what I was doing,
something just broke.
The president's been shot.
My God. I was up.
I absolutely am always so completely moved by that song. And that moment just says, like, it's, I don't know if you've ever talk to your parents about the moment when JFK was assassinated, but like, it's so true. Like, they remember exactly everything about where they were. My parents remember so much about that day, and my parents can hardly even remember my name most of the time, because like, they're like, "Which child are you?" And I'm like, "I'm the gay one." And they're like, "Oh, right. Oh,
God, right, that one." It's same though. Same. Like my grandmother calls me by like all my other cousins' names. My 93-year-old grandmother, but she remembers everything about the day JFK got shot. It's insane.
And so it's such a brilliant moment, and it's such a brilliant show, and I'm so happy that it's having its little another little moment in the sun in New York, because I think no matter what, reviving theater and reviving good theater, even if the productions might not be everything we wanted in any kind of way, I think it's always just so important, because this is a show that is about politics, which is one of the aspects we get to discuss in theater. And, you know, like, some would maybe say that, like, our current political state, like, isn't the best. I'm not exactly sure who those people are who would say that. But, like,
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen more balance in the world.
I've heard through the grapevine.
Some rumblings.
Which is a dance move that I do oft.
It's the best way to impress at a dance call.
Yes, it is. Just do a grapevine. I'm really quite happy that it's going on right now. I want to bring up one other little news article before we move on to some other little sections to talk about. And so I'm actually having a little trouble finding it, and I'm wondering if you saw it and maybe it was taken down. I swear I didn't dream it in a fever dream, but I saw an article yesterday that was a review of Donna Murphy and Hello Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
That basically said Donna Murphy, I'm even afraid to say it because speaking of assassins, I could just feel someone like having like a laser pointer like shot at my forehead.
You're simply quoting. You're simply quoting. Go for it.
I'm simply quoting that this review from a very large news source said that Donna Murphy outshines Bette Midler.
And oh.
I'm intrigued. Have you seen Donna Murphy yet in the role?
I have not. I've had a few friends who saw her and said she's absolutely wonderful, and I'm sure she is. She is wonderful. But I've only seen Bette. So I would like to go back again and see Donna.
Yes, I would too. I think I just found it.
I know Hollywood Reporter reviewed it and Deadline reviewed it. Was it one of those two?
It's AM New York. And the title grabbed my eye with like a huge hook yesterday because it is Hello Dolly review sans Bette Midler, stand by Donna Murphy outshines star. That is like a loaded review statement, I would say.
Well, I mean, they did their job. They got you to view it, and I think
they did.
Truth be told, that probably was the goal more so than stating their opinion.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting review, and I think some of it brings up some interesting points, which is that neither of us having seen Donna perform and both of us having seen Bette, which was, I mean, talk about like a night out in the theater that I just like enjoyed from start to finish. And not even just because of like how wonderful and fantastic and amazing her performance was and the production as a whole. But I mean, like, there was like an energy and a buzz in that theater when you go in there of like so many people are just so ready to be entertained and to like have a good old musical comedy like time. Oh, yeah. But one of the,
it's like the gayest, most well-behaved rock concert, that show. Like everyone goes crazy.
But one of the things that the article brings up, which I thought was very interesting, was that, Donna Murphy, although of course, like is playing Dolly, the titular character in Hello Dolly, is that she makes the show a total ensemble piece, and although she is without a doubt the like beacon of light in the production, she helps all her other castmates shine. And I thought that was really an interesting kind of point to bring out, because with a show like Hello Dolly, that is a huge tug of war challenge, isn't it? Because like people are going to see Dolly. People went to go see Carol Channing. They went to go see Pearl Bailey. They, you know, like the movie, they went to go see Barbra Streisand. And so I thought it was just really interesting because it was saying that at the same time she outshined Bette. Once again, not my words. Once again, this.
Go to Canada and shoot John.
Once again, Matt Windham, who wrote the review, his words. But not only did she outshine Bette, but that she made her other cast members shine even brighter. And I just thought that was so interesting because as theater, I think that's a huge part of it. What do you think? Am I digging too deeply into this review, into like a psychological, like...
I mean, I think you're digging a little too deeply into Hello Dolly, but that's
how
neither here
dare
nor there.
You?
How dare I? Okay, sure, yeah, fine.
I've been talking about Hello Dolly with my therapist for the past 3 months now. Okay. That's all we've been talking about.
Oh my god, your therapist must love you. It's Dolly, you're right, Dolly is a very weird beast, because it is technically a star vehicle, but...
Right, it's the exact opposite of Assassins. Like, you have a complete ensemble show, and then you have a star vehicle, but with a lot of interesting characters.
But and not even that, like, it's not a funny girl or a gypsy where the leading lady is on stage 80% of the time. Dolly actually is not on stage that often. It's sort of like, she comes... makes a huge impression, then she's off stage for like 15 minutes, comes back, makes a big impression, is off stage again for like another 20 minutes, comes back, makes a big impression, closes out act one, and then she doesn't come back in act two for like, again, another like 20 minutes. It's long intervals, and part of it is sort of like the leave them wanting more sort of thing, and it also could have been that, you know, Carol Channing, who originated the role, really is only best in small doses. And they probably knew that. Like, come on, have Carol do her thing, make the audience, you know, want to see her again, then have her come back on, do her thing. So, I mean, it is, I wouldn't say it's an ensemble show, but it is a show where while the star does shine brightest, she's doesn't shine longest, if that makes sense. Like, she's, there's a lot of room for that supporting cast to make their case, and they kind of need to. It's like Dolly cannot shine if the supporting cast is only mediocre, because they have to kind of keep the audience warmed up for when she comes back. And I would definitely say that with Bette, it felt less like the audience was responding to the supporting cast, and more sort of they were having residual euphoria from Bette being on stage, and they were sort of like still enjoying that until she came back again. And I feel like maybe with Donna, the euphoria may not be as high when she's on stage, but it allows the audience to enjoy the other cast members more when she's off.
I think I agree with you with that, and because that was I found the line that one of the things that like I really just kept thinking about. It says that Murphy also affects how the audience at large responds to the show. With Midler in charge, it's all about her. Even if her energy is flagging, the audience is nevertheless rapt with her. But the production somewhat flags when she is not present. And I think that's what you were saying. Like, I did kind of feel that way, too. Like, it's just kind of like, when she is not there, which are those bigger chunks. And I don't think that's anyone's fault per se, but I just think it's very interesting. I've been so caught up with the idea of the fact that like we have these two huge like stars.
Performers.
Yeah. One is without a doubt, undeniably, a much bigger star. Like I'm not trying to like downplay Donna Murphy's importance because I'm such a huge fan. But I mean,
I don't think anyone can deny that, though.
Yeah,
like, come on.
I think so too, and I think there's. I'm sure Donna Murphy's aware of it as well. Like, I mean, she is essentially Bette Midler's, you know, standby. She's her matinee Christine. Like, she's still the role is hers, but she doesn't do the role every night. And so it's just been so interesting to me to the idea of like, do you think that, like, Bette Midler gets, like, weird about the fact that Donna Murphy is playing the role?
Oh, I highly doubt it. Bette knows that the show is basically her. And I don't think there's any... I don't think there's any ego tarnished based on it. But I also think that...
I don't think there's a doubt about that in anyone with eyes in New York. I mean, it's hello, Bette, like, without a doubt.
Exactly. And I think, actually, with the safety of that is that she can allow Donna to be as great as Donna can be, and it won't affect her, really. So she can truly just be supportive. Because it doesn't... There's no legacy that's going to get changed because Donna's great. And this show will close, as most shows do, except for Phantom, and people will remember it as Bette Midler came to town for a year and, like, did Dolly. That's what it's going to be. And those of us, hopefully, who are lucky enough to see Donna as well can say that, you know, and Donna was there to keep the momentum up when Bette was not when Bette was not there. Now that Bette couldn't keep momentum up, but yeah, no, that's a very weird review.
You know, basically, what I'm trying to do here is, Ryan Murphy, if you're listening, I want a season of Feud about Donna Murphy and Bette Midler. That's what I want. So let's get that happening.
It should be Scott Rudin and the Tony Awards. That should be Feud. Let's move on. Let's get to some breakdowns today, shall we?
Yeah. So I was looking at not only theater breakdowns, but I'm also always interested in infomercial, because sometimes the things.
God.
And so here's a breakdown for a shampoo brand commercial. So this is to offer kind of the opposite side of what we also experience in breakdowns. Linda, 17 to 30 years old, all ethnicities female. And that's one run-on sentence. No punctuation, just a period at the end. Second character, Jane, 30 to 40 years old, all ethnicities female. Athlete A, 20 to 30 years old, all ethnicities, athletic, healthy, charming.
Healthy, charming?
Yes. It goes all ethnicities, comma, athletic, comma, healthy, karma, healthy, charming. So here's a breakdown where we get the description healthy, charming.
That's going to be on my Tinder profile. 5'9", healthy, charming.
Healthy, charming. Like,
not two words, one word. Healthy, charming.
So what, what is the opposite of healthy, charming? Like, unhealthily charming? Healthy, uncharming? Like, who would be healthy, charming? Like, is that, is Andy Carl healthy, charming? He has an injury.
Who's got pizzazz, maybe.
I don't...
Like, the most pizzazziest Soul Cycle instructor.
I don't get it. And so I was laughing so hard at that one because I was like, the fuck? What? What is going on here? Like, there was another breakdown that, like, literally it was about, like, an actress in D.C. whose husband's a politician. And, like, everything seems to be going, like, kind of towards that plot. And then literally one of the breakdowns is for a voodoo expert. And I was like, what? Like, it's just some of these breakdowns, you guys. I don't know. If you're listening, if you're still listening, if we haven't just completely turned you off by our gay tangents, what do you think about breakdowns? Let us know a little bit more. Or, like, one of my most concerning breakdowns that I will see every few months on Playbill is a man who is so obviously not casting anything. But there are breakdowns on an official Broadway website where a guy is just trying to get people to send, he's trying to get male actors to send him pictures of their feet. Like, he's a foot fetish. Have you seen this?
No. Where is this?
Really? I tried to find one on Playbill, but it's already, all the local ones have expired, and it's always under different names. Honestly, you could just edit out everything we've just talked about. And this is one of the things I'm most concerned about in the business, is there is a man who every couple months will post that he is either looking for actors for a, like, one-act play or for, like, a new web series. And it always starts off with something like, you know, like, these two characters, like, Tad and blah, 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 blah. And it seems like everything seems kind of normal. And then in the character breakdowns, it's like, actor must have a size 12 shoe and be comfortable with their feet being massaged or tickled. And I'm like, what? And then at the end, in the submission, it's like, please send your headshot and resume and a current photo of your feet.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I'm not making this up. I know that other people have seen this, and I know that other people have witnessed this and put it together. But it just, it makes me so freaked out, because you know that some people who are just moving to the city are like, oh, like, this is a role I could play. Like, the character description always describes it as, like, very generic types. And so, like, I could see that, like, a lot of people would be like, oh, I could easily play this role. And normally, money comes along with it. I don't know if he's ever actually, this person who does it, I don't know if he's ever actually auditioned. So if anyone knows anything what I'm talking about, if we could get some kind of serial type part of the web series where I put together this mystery of this foot fetishist who is taking advantage of actors, and please let me know. So that's what I got about breakdowns.
And then
today.
Contact your local authorities and have them arrest this dude.
Please.
I mean, I have this like dark vision of Fame. What's her name? Coco. Where like Coco goes to the guy thinking she's going to be in a movie, and it's like in a rundown apartment, and she has to take off her top, and she's crying. Like, yep. That's what I'm thinking right now, except it's with feet. It's like, now take off shoes and take off your socks, and I've got a feather. I'm going to tickle you. And it's like,
yes.
And it's like so gross. Ugh. And like, there's like 70s porn playing in the background.
Yeah. It's so disconcerting. Like, honestly, yeah. It makes me so upset.
I want a shower.
It does. Okay, so now that we've talked about foot fetishes, which I know is exactly where you guys thought this first podcast was going to go, Matt, do you think we should finish with, Matt had an idea to do this little segment called Jukebox That Musical, correct?
Yes, that was my idea. So I want to just say, this was my idea of taking a catalog of songs from a specific artist or band or whatnot, and then like stringing songs together to create a plot and just like see what happens.
Here's the thing. We had a lab shop work. We had a lab workshop of it today to figure it out, little nuts and bolts. And next week we're going to give you the NAMPT, the Nymph, the Fringe 2018 production of the Michelle Branch, Vanessa Carlton lesbian jukebox musical. I couldn't come up with the title.
We're going to stick with it. We're going to stick with the Vanessa Carlton, Michelle Branch catalog for next week.
Well, yeah, if we want to make it better, unless you can come up with something better. But I can't figure out what the title should be. So the workshop title is Brunettes, which I don't know.
Well, sure. It's usually the title of a song from the catalog, like Mamma Mia or Good Vibrations.
Oh yeah,
or
beautiful.
Like that. Beautiful.
I guess we're gonna go with Everywhere.
No, that's working title. Working title.
Working
we'll come
title
up something even better.
Everywhere Brunettes.
Everywhere Brunettes. Yeah. So that'll be our challenge for next week. We're gonna jukebox that musical, and we're gonna give you our full budgeted NAMP to Nymph production.
And if you have any ideas of any title. Pop singers like the Spice Girls or anything like that you would like to see us jukeboxing the musical to, let us know, and we will try.
Yeah.
I don't really know a lot of pop music because I was...
Neither do I.
I was raised should in a very religious church, but...
Should we maybe... I was raised Jewish, but only by, like, trump card. We never went to synagogue. We just would tell people we were Jewish to, you know...
Well, yeah, to get ahead of
the theater.
I'll
say sympathy, but... Yeah, just so we could pass on judgment. Should we, like, maybe come up with, like, a Twitter account to, like, ask people to give us recommendations, or should we just, like... troll the message boards and
no, I think we
meet
can do it.
People can when
you post a podcast, we'll edit.
Oh, right.
Out.
People can
comment. So yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. So this, I think we've covered a lot today. Was it perfect? No. So what I'm going to say is just, you know, bear with us, guys. Like, as we're figuring this out, help us. Like, let us know what we can do, what you want to hear. We still have some tricks up our sleeves, and we're definitely gonna cover a lot in this series, but let us know what you think in some comments below. And I'm excited. Are you excited, Mathieu?
I'm very excited, Jean. I hope that the comments are helpful and not mean. So please don't say anything about, you know, John's morning voice or my nodes. Constructive criticism is always lovely.
I dare you to be mean.
No, this isn't Broadway world. You can't be anonymous and mean to us.
Yeah, this
or
is...
if you're gonna be, you at least have to have some like knowledge behind it. Don't just say like, "Screw you guys."
Yeah,
wicked rules. Like, although, give me more than that.
Although true, all those things are true.
I mean, God damn it, John. this is quickly turning to XXX. All right, so yeah, amazing. So thank you guys for joining us. This has been Broadway Breakdown. I am Matt Koplik.
And I am John Wascavage, and I hope you guys have a blessed Broadway week.
I hope your week is very pingy. Thank you so much. Bye, guys. Let's
oh my God.
Let's play this out.
Yeah.
Who should we have play us out? shout out a Broadway diva.
I think we should have Bette Midler play us out because we love her.
Okay, Bette Midler's gonna play us out.
All right,
thanks, Bette.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm gonna raise the roof. I'm gonna carry on. Give me an old trombone. Give me an old baton. Before the parade passes by.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.